Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew. The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisay.
Happy New Year!
Oh. You're a good dancer.
Tell you what, that stripper pole really,
Hey, Nadia.
I'm sorry.
don't be queering my moves, yeah, man.
No, that was...
You've done that before, haven't you?
That's awesome.
Your wife's
gonna
love you.
Yeah, I think she does.
Yeah, she does.
Funny dad. this show, it's like live right now in like the middle of December, but it's going to air in the archives December 31st.
Right.
New Year's Eve.
Nice.
So all you people who have nowhere else to go, you can be yourself.
Listen to us.
Yeah, actually, I don't go out on New Year's Eve.
Me neither.
That's like suicidal nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Just drinking.
Home with a wife.
Yeah.
You know,
drink your homebrew.
Hope kids. For a happy celebration
after hours.
You know, I always tell my wife, yeah, I want to end the new year with a bang.
Yes. Yeah,
literally.
Yeah.
She's like, okay. Oh gosh,
awesome.
John, that's just rude.
It's not rude.
Please, John.
Oh, my apologies. I'm sorry.
Such that, you know, you can always tell which is the second show of the night.
Yeah, but at least it's appropriate.
Because all the drinking that goes on, and then, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, it's all in the toilet now.
Well, if they're listening on New Year's Eve, then it'll make perfect sense.
You know, exactly. Everyone's
drinking.
Pretty much along the same lines as we are at this point. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, no, go ahead.
Nothing. Mumbling. It must be the beer, the Kolsch.
It must be the beer. Mm. Yeah. All right. So if you're listening to this,
it's
put on by the Brewing Network, right?
Yes.
The Brewing Network, which you're getting all this for free. And one of the things you can do to help support programming like this, go to the Brewing Network store, thebrewingnetwork.com/store. And they've got a bunch of stuff there for sale. You know, hoodies, hats, shirts, books.
And
AHA memberships.
Yes.
All right. So you can buy Brewing Classic Styles, 80 winning recipes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is a great book, and eventually buy one. But if you buy something today, buy an AHA membership.
Right.
AHA membership, $38, comes to you. That includes shipping. And, you know, same price you pay, you know, going to the AHA site. But what happens here is a small portion goes to the Brewing Network, keeps Justin
fed, which is important.
Adult diapers and ramen.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to get a great magazine in Zymergy. You're going to get your pub discount program. You're going to get all the AHA events. You're going to get discounts on the National Homebrew Competition, a lot of different things. And, you're going to support a great cause, which is homebrewing in the United States and actually in the world. They fight for homebrewers' rights and craft brewers' rights, and important thing to support.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's freedom.
If you can afford it, it's like a batch and a half of beer. dedicate that towards doing that. I think right. It's a really important thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I didn't mention our sponsor, which is Northern Brewer.
There you go.
Another great cause to support.
Mm-hmm.
They help support this program.
Highly knowledgeable staff.
Yeah, knowledgeable staff, great products, great prices, good people.
Great mead makers.
You can't go wrong there. Support northernbrewer.com.
And with your leftover $2, make a donation.
There you go.
You have $40.
$40. Drink a 40.
Get
donated
to AHA. $2 to make a donation. There you go.
Mr. 40. Yeah, and that's coming from Fitty G. So Fitty, you got like another 10.
Damn. I'll make one now. I'll make a donation.
All right. There you go. So tonight we're talking about Belgian
Golden
strong ale.
Nice. Almost sounded like Flemish, kind of. Belgium.
Sounded like I wasn't speaking English.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I love Belgians. I mean, they're just such unique beers. And
oh, I thought you were talking about the people.
Oh, the people.
I was like, okay. I wonder where John's going with this.
No, I'm talking about the beer. I don't know. They're just they're so over the top, unique, and this is what the yeast do to the beers. Absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
To the wort, I should say.
Yeah. The people are really nice too. If you go to Belgium, you know,
I'm hoping to go there.
Yeah, just. Yeah, you go anywhere in the world, people are nice.
Yeah,
you know, if you're
nice.
If you're not a jerk, you know, people are nice at the world over.
Right.
And actually, you know, the recipe that we're going to do tonight, the genesis of this, and it's not in the book. And usually, I was able to mention the genesis of all my recipes along those lines. And I had messed around with Golden Strong before, but I was down at my good friend Harold Gabranson's house, and he was brewing one day, and this guy, Dave Livonian, he comes in, and he's brought in this Belgian strong ale, kind of like a Duvel, that he has, he's talked to the brewer, he's like made this his, quest to absolutely... duplicate
Nail
this
it.
Beer.
Yeah.
And he's got this huge sheet, written up of details of what the brewery does, all the little details, what he did. He's got the differences highlighted in red ink of what was different between his batch and the batch that the brewery would do. And he's shown this to the brewer.
Wow.
And, the guy gave him some hints and some tips and
that's the way to do it.
And Dave's just the most wonderful guy, really nice, just a kind, easygoing, just a wonderful person. And he pours some of this for me, and it's the closest clone of Duvel I've ever had.
Wow.
I thought it was really good. He wasn't happy with it because it's a little bit sweeter.
You think it's dry?
I was just like, this is like the best thing I've ever had.
Yeah.
He's like, well, yeah, thanks. And I said, can I get a copy of that information from me? He's like, yeah, here. Just hands it to me.
Oh, cool.
And so, that helped me tweak my recipe as well.
Right.
So I made, I don't follow all the little paths that he went down to do it. But, it's really inspired a lot by Dave Livonian. And it was really cool of him. Again, the great brewers will share their information freely.
Oh, yeah.
Here you go. They know what they it's
not the
they're
ingredients.
Not yeah they're not going to have one recipe that is successful for them.
Yeah.
They're going to have so many, and they can create new things that'll be successful.
Right.
They don't have to worry about you copying one of the things they did in the past. I mean, look at Vinnie Chaluza from Russian River.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the way his recipe is like, okay, here you go. Pliny the Elder clone. Everybody's brewing it.
Yeah. No.
Well,
not anymore. But yeah.
Right. But
yeah.
He's so free with that information. It's really wonderful because why? If for some reason everybody starts brewing it, he'll go ahead and brew something else, and he'll do it better than anybody else can do it based off of the exact information that he has. He'll give you every bit of information, and then
it's the brewer.
It's the brewer. It's that attention to quality that a place like Russian River has that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, Vinny gave a great talk at NCHF this year and gave away all the secrets about how he uses wild yeast. You know, and I, every time I hear him talk, I always pick up something like, oh, I understand a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'll still never understand what he knows, but it's just amazing what you can learn from other brewers and how giving they are. And it's just a really humble community, too, as a whole. So,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But again, you know, they're successful. Why are they successful? You know, the quality of their operation. And
sure.
It's not, you know, being secretive about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all these other, you know, that's what drives me nuts when brewers are real secretive about something.
Yeah.
It's like...
Give me a
so
break.
That must be the only thing you really know, because
yeah, that's surprising. You don't want to give it up.
Because you don't want to give it up. It's like, all right, well, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, good luck to you.
Yeah, we should all be sharing information as much as possible.
It's yeah.
Good for everybody.
Yeah.
That's how we all move forward.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it's good karma.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You got a description for us for Gold Strong Ale?
Oh, yes, I do. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and
share. Do you want to hear my this? Belgian Gold Strong description?
Give it to me, John.
Here we go. All right, this beer is so unique. Unique. The smell of this beer, the aromas, there's definitely going to be esters present. Just Belgians are highly fruit ester producers. And even some hints of spice, and I relate to it as a pepper. Maybe some perfume alcohol coming through, but it should be balanced with the esters, just because it's a high alcohol beer. No hop aromas, if so little, from the noble hops used. Visually, it's yellow. I would say pale yellow if you're doing Duvel, to medium gold, and that might be based on changed by the gravity, of course. Clear, very clear. High carbonation, I think, is a key too for the style. You want that clean, frothy head. When you drink it, it should just be soft on the lips, and it's definitely warming after you drink it. And you, after you drink a few sips, you should definitely see some legs from the alcohol, because it's definitely a potty beer. Overall, the flavor is definitely a synergy between the fruit esters, the spiciness, the phenols, the hot alcohols, with a round, soft malt character, which I think is really important, is that soft malt character, and a dry finish. And the esters would be hints of like pears, apples,
mm-hmm.
And some, you know, pepper from the phenols. Bitterness comes from usually the high CO2. You're not doing a high bittered hop. You're doing a high carbonated hop, or a beer, I should say, from the high CO2. You're probably 2.5 to 3 volumes. And overall, it's a high gravity Belgian beer, pale in color. And very intense in flavor, and it's definitely an enjoyable all-around just Belgian strong ale.
Mm-hmm.
Good beer to share with your friends, and probably you only need about 2 pints of it to feel the buzz, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know
the ABV on this runs, you know, between 7.5 and 10.5.
That's big.
Yeah, it's a fairly big beer, and... The you know, you mentioned malty in there and the soft maltiness,
mm-hmm.
and the thing I want to emphasize to listeners is that it has that soft malty Pilsner malt background, but it shouldn't be a highly malty sweet beer, and it shouldn't be one with a high malt character, like, you know, bready, anything like that.
Okay.
It's, again, it's soft, it's in the background, mm-hmm. but it is malty in that way, that character, but, you know, relatively subtle compared to something like an Oktoberfest,
right.
or a Munich Helles or something like that, where that's, you know, or a Doppelbock even, you know, it's completely almost the opposite end. And I would emphasize as the most important characteristic is that crisp, dry finish.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you
it's
know,
hard to do.
Really, yeah, that's hard to do, and that's really critical in all these beers.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is you can have that sweet note when you first drink it, and then it finishes dry and crisp, and you know, all that fades away, and you're ready for the next sip, which is part of what makes it extra drinkable.
Yeah. Well, it's like it's such a dry beer, and there's so much going on,
mm-hmm.
that when you have that first sip, you're like, oh. And then you go, and then you want that second one and that third, mm-hmm. one, because you're like, I can't believe I'm drinking this.
And then like the effervescence helps,
yeah.
cleanse the palate as
right.
well, and yeah, makes for a quite a drinkable beer, and you know, quite deadly with as much alcohol as
yeah.
it has as well.
Yeah, after.
All right, so what we're going to do, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will go over the recipe to make an award-winning Belgian Strong Golden Ale.
Coming this fall.
Four beer kits and a bag of sanitizer? That'll be $4,000 for shipping.
Never. I won't pay more than $20 for shipping.
Ha ha ha. You will not find a deal like that now. Northern Brewers' flat rate shipping promotion is finished.
No! I'll never pay that much. Never!
My patience wears thin, young home brewer. You must pay too much for shipping.
Never fear. Northern Brewer's here.
Foolish Northern Brewer. Your flat rate shipping promotion has ended.
No, sir. Now we got $7.99 flat rate shipping all the time over here.
Northern Brewer has all of your home brewing, wine, mead, cider, and soda making needs. And a complete line of award-winning beer kits, including the intergalactically boozy Bourbon Barrel Porter. Still with cheap-ass shipping. Place an order at northernbrewer.com and get some flat rate $7.99 shipping action. Offer good and contiguous U.S. only. Some heavy and or bulky items are excluded, such as glass bottles, sacks of grain, bulk DME, and oak barrels.
Take that, guy. $7.99 flat rate shipping.
Ah, my retina!
Retina? Damn near killed ya.
Did you know that every day a brewcaster goes to bed hungry? Did you know that that brewcaster is silently calling for the help of people just like you? Do you know that every day the unicorn and the rainbow have to blow sailors for loose change? For less than the cost of a half-calf, quad-shot, venti, extra-hot, soy milk, triple-pump, hazel, low-fat foam, double-cupped macchiato a day, you can help starving adults in Pacheco. Your love can be felt for as little as 7 cents a day. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com/donate to sign up today for as little as $2 a month. Private first class in the BN Army. Buy your way up the ranks as corporal, sergeant, ranger, or colonel with an easy-to-do monthly donation that keeps brewcasters alive and your favorite internet radio station broadcasting. No donation is too small to help those in need. Can't you find it in your heart to share your love with a brewcaster? In return, you will enjoy the wealth of knowledge that comes with every episode of The Session, The Jameel Show, and yes, even that other show. Thank you for listening, and please sign up for your donation at thebrewingnetwork.com/donate today.
White Labs is a leader in pure yeast and fermentation services, serving the beer, wine, and distilling industries from worldwide producers for more than a decade. White Labs has three all-new vials for you to pitch this year, home brewers, so fire up your kettles, fill up your fermenters, and get ready for Cry Havoc, the signature yeast strain from Charlie Papazian. This yeast can ferment both ales and lagers and is great for bottle conditioning, too. Second, a cream ale blend of ale and lager yeast strains. This blend creates a clean, crisp, light American lager-style ale. Last, a Belgian-style Saison ale yeast blend. This blend melds Belgian-style ale yeast and Saison strains to create complex, fruity aromas and flavors. Get complete fermentation quickly with this blend's spicy, earthy, and clove-like flavors. White Labs, your brewing partner for great yeast. These new strains are available now for home brewers, breweries, and homebrew shops everywhere. White Labs, it's all in the vial.
Now, back to the Jameel Show.
I feel good. I knew that I would not.
All right, so we're talking about Belgian Golden Strong Ale. And I got a recipe here that has won a few awards.
Did you win at the Nationals with this recipe last year?
I'm not sure if it was last year.
Or the year before?
I don't know.
It's been so many years. I mean,
it's so hard to remember, you know. I just got that massive awards hanging around.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can see I'm wearing them here in the studio.
Nice.
Let's see. Original gravity, 1072, 17.5 Plato. Final gravity, 1007, or 1.9 Plato.
Nice.
Dry, dry as a bone. Apparent degree of fermentation, 89%. So this is going to attenuate.
Wow.
89%. Dry, 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 dry.
So I'm maybe getting ahead, but are you using like other sugars?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You're gonna use a big old load of table sugar.
Okay.
IBUs 32.
Wow. So that's pretty.
Fair amount of bittering. It's a fairly bitter beer.
Huh.
See, what happens is if you get examples over here in the U.S., or, you know, somewhere where the examples have been around a long time,
mm-hmm.
bittering drops like in half over the course of 6 months.
Right.
So we tend to get them a lot sweeter. If you get them fairly early in the process, they tend to be a bit more bitter.
Okay.
Up
so,
front. Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so, right. So, you know, you let something store. If you store something for a couple of years, it turns sweeter, you know, because the bitterness drops out.
Right. That's funny how that works.
And the malt's oxidized and things like that. Hmm. It tends to taste sweeter. IBU's 32 Color 3 SRM, and your alcohol is going to be about 8.5% ABV.
Wow, that's a lower SRM.
Yeah, it's a real light color, molder. You know, it's, you know, like you're saying, kind of yellow.
Like straw-like almost?
Yeah, And if you're an extract brewer, you'll go with 8.4 pounds or 3.8 kilograms of a Pilsner liquid malt extract. And then the rest is going to be cane sugar, 3 pounds or 1.36 kilograms of cane sugar. That's table sugar.
Okay.
You can use beet sugar. You know, when I go to the grocery store and I see C&H, that's cane sugar.
Right.
Okay? And then when you see the bags that say sugar on them.
Right.
And you turn them around and look at where it'll say beet sugar on them.
Okay.
The cheaper things. Now, the sugar that they use in Belgium tends to be beet sugar.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and use
the beet.
Beet sugar. Yeah, and what's interesting in the book, I said the word cane sugar, and now I think I should have explained that it's actually a little more authentic to use beet sugar.
Okay.
In any case,
you can use either.
It's simple sugars. They're going to ferment fully, and there's really no flavor difference. I mean, there may be a subtle flavor difference between a tablespoon of cane sugar, a tablespoon of beet sugar in your mouth, but. You know, you use either one, and what that's going to help do is dry the thing out. It's so easily fermentable for the yeast. That's why you're gonna add a lot of that.
Does that encourage the yeast to absorb other sugars too, from the malt, from the wort at all? When you put simple sugars into the environment, does it help them kind of dry out the whole?
Well, yeah, actually, it kind of works in the reverse. You got to be kind of careful.
Okay.
This is why you don't do starters using table sugar or honey or molasses or any of that stuff.
Okay.
Because if you use a simple sugar as the food, sole food for a yeast, it very quickly, as it multiplies, loses the ability to ferment maltose.
Huh.
It needs to create an enzyme in order to... convert and use maltose, break apart maltose.
Wow. So it's actually not working at its fullest potential.
Right. It's like, well, I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like kids. It's like, well, if you don't tell them, you don't beat them when they don't clean the room.
Right.
Then, you know, they pretty soon stop cleaning the room.
Right.
Right? So, I do not beat my kids.
I can see you do that.
Right. Yeah. But
that's
an
interesting point.
You know,
yeah, it's a good analogy.
So you need to be a little bit careful that you don't go too nuts with the simple sugars, and then they don't fully attenuate either, because that can happen. Because their initial take is, the simpler sugars go first,
right?
And they're gonna focus just on those.
Okay, so the replication will change then too.
Right, especially if you're the yeast growth under just simple sugar conditions, they lose the ability to ferment maltose within a generation or two.
Wow, that's a great tip.
Yeah,
thanks
so,
for sharing.
So again, you never use simple sugars for starters. All right, hops you're going to use. Or I'm sorry, if you're an all grain brewer, you're going to, instead of the Pilsner extract, you're going to use 11 pounds or 5 kilograms of continental Pilsner malt. If you can get a Belgian Pilsner malt, that's ideal, but
right.
German Pilsner malt is good too. Your last choice would be like a U.S. Pilsner malt. Mash at 149 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 degrees C. And, since you got that lower mash temperature, give it some time to convert fully.
Right.
It takes a little bit longer. You can go, I tried this one thing where in Brew Like a Monk, they were talking about how Stan Hieronymus's book, excellent book,
oh, yeah.
Brew Like a Monk, you should get yourself a copy. how the breweries would start at like a protein rest, and they would raise it, you know, 2 degrees every minute or something like that.
Okay.
Up to, you know, through the 140s, and this would make it more fermentable. I've tried that, and it really didn't do anything more for me than just going at
single.
A, yeah, you know, 149, 148, 147, whatever it takes for you to get a wort that will ferment fully down to
dryness.
You know, the dry point that you want to get to.
Hmm.
For hops, I like to use a Czech Zatz. And at 3.5% alpha acid, 90-minute addition right at the very beginning of the boil. It's going to be a 90-minute boil because you're using Pilsner malt.
Yeah, DMS.
And you need to, yeah, you need to boil that sucker for 90 minutes. I use 2 1/4 ounce or 64 grams. It should give you about 32 IBUs using the Rager formula.
Okay.
And you can use, you know, Lublin or Hallertau or, you know.
Vanguard these days.
You can use a lot of different hops for that.
Sterling, but, maybe.
Yeah, you know, anything continental. You could even get away with Kent Goldings or whatever. But, again, you got 32 IBU, so I'd try and, you know, if you're going with a lower alpha hop, I would go with something along the saws or something, you know. The Hallertau, something with a little spiciness that's noble. Mm-hmm. I'd go with the noble hop. If you're going with you know, something with a little more that's not along those lines, I'd go with something higher alpha acid, so you put less amount of hops in there.
Right.
So you're not getting too much of the hop flavor through.
Okay.
But check Zatz at 3.5% alpha acid. You're putting 2 1/4 ounces in a 6 gallon batch or 5 gallon batch. You know, 64 grams. That's considerable amount of hops, so you get some of that flavor through.
Sure.
And I forgot to mention, all right, so the way these batches are calculated, 70% efficiency for all grain.
Okay.
And 6 gallons at the end of the boil. You chill it down.
Half gallon.
Five and a half gallons go to the fermenter, and then out of that, you get 5 gallons in the keg or the bottles.
Right. Question for you. Your recipe, you had a pretty low starting gravity, like 1076, was it?
1072.
Now, if I was to do a 1092, like I'm thinking, oh my God, it's a high alcohol beer. I got to go big. But it probably won't attenuate out to dryness.
Right.
Which you don't want.
Right.
So, now how important is that, though?
Well, you know, if you're trying to clone Duvel, like my friend Dave Lavonian, then the starting gravity is about 1072.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty important then.
And everybody thinks, oh, you know, it's, you know, big, high alcohol, all this. But, you know, it is, but it finishes really dry. And that's the trick. If you go up into 1092, it's not going to finish as dry.
Hmm.
Or you're going to have a harder time getting it that dry.
It'd probably be too hot if you got it down.
Right. So that's one of the reasons to not go too high and attenuate it more.
Right.
And, you know, you can produce, you know, alcohol a variety of ways.
Sure.
It's all based on the attenuation, you know.
Huh.
So, you know, but that's an excellent point because I think a lot of people start much higher.
Right. Just because they think they have to get that gravity up. But you can do it with dryness.
Right. Yeah, by attenuating more.
Go dry.
Right.
Do you think extract brewers have that same control? Because they don't, I mean, with extract, I don't think you have as much control over the malt of the beer. I mean, I don't know what our suppliers mash at, but I'm just curious. You think an extract really can get a dry?
Well, here's the thing. They tend to hit a kind of a mid ground, right?
Okay.
And they tend to, you know, make an average wort that's average fermentability. Some of the more fermentable ones come from Breese.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you can get those things to attenuate up to like 80% or so.
Okay.
And
that's great.
And here's the trick, is you're adding a large percentage of simple sugar.
Right.
And that's going to help with attenuation. If that doesn't do it, you can always either change extracts to a more fermentable extract, or you can add, you know, a larger percentage of sugars. Or with extract, here's the trick.
I'm listening. Let me just take a sip here. Go ahead.
I see you've braced yourself.
I'm ready.
Chair. You're ready.
Like
you know you're going to be blown away by this one.
Yeah.
Every time I learn something new.
Because you know when I get the tone of my voice.
And your eyes kind of get focused.
Get a little squinty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Here it is.
All right. So here's the thing. What you can do, if you're using extract and you need to change the fermentability of the extract, you can't do it with simple sugars alone. You make a mini mash using your extract. You mix your extract in water. Take yourself a pound of domestic American 2-row or 6-row if you really want a lot of enzymes, and do yourself a mini mash with that.
With the extract.
With the extract.
Look at you.
The enzymes in the malt will continue to break down the sugars in the extract.
Wow. And that's at your 146 for
right.
Fahrenheit.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
No way.
So you're giving away all your secrets today.
You can actually break down the
continue to mash
the extract and make the extract more fermentable.
Wow.
You can't change the extract to be less fermentable.
But you can break
can't
it
happen.
Down.
But you can make it more fermentable this
That's
way.
That's awesome.
Okay, so you can do your own little mini mash there and convert your extract down.
And that's easy to do.
Yeah.
24x24 bag
yeah.
and
yeah, just you
what,
know,
two,
add
three
a pound.
Pounds.
Pound. It just depends. You know, the less mulchy, the enzymes don't get used up.
Uh-huh.
It just takes longer.
Okay.
So, especially if you swirl it around in the extract, you know, you just need to, you know, move it all around through there.
Interesting.
And it will go ahead and convert those sugars down for you.
There you go.
Pretty slick. Huh?
Yeah, you just, whew. That's a doozy.
See? That was a good one,
that
huh?
was Wow. Right. I actually asked a good question.
Yeah, and, you know, another way you could do it, you could get, like, Beano and put a drop of Beano into your extract, and it'll go ahead and start to break it down pretty quick.
Have you ever had a Beano beer
before? Yes,
oh
I have.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was like 10:02 it finished that.
Well, here's the trick, all right? Here's the trick with a Beano. All right, if you're going to use Beano in your mash, or you're going to use Beano in your extract, okay? You don't want to use it post-boil. You want to use it pre-boil, okay?
Okay.
And at some point, you heat it up, start to boil it, it'll denature the enzymes, and the Beano will stop.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So you just, it's tricky. The amount of enzyme you add, this Beano enzyme you add, and the amount of time you give it to work and the temperature you give it to work is all going to affect how fast it works and how much it breaks things down.
Interesting.
So
would you start at the end of the mash?
You know, I haven't done a lot of experimentation on it. Yeah, I'd do it towards the end.
Okay.
But instead, I think I'd just use it right in the kettle.
Okay. Right up front, right when you're sparging or whatever. And
right.
Just throw her in.
Or, you know, extract brewer.
Right.
Mix your extract in there, add your Beano, and, you know, the first time, try maybe a half an hour or an hour. And, you know, at whatever temperature, and then, you know, fire it up to boil and kill it.
Wow.
So it stops.
Interesting.
And then, you know, the next time see if that was enough or not based on the extract you're using. I mean, there's so many variables in there. I can't give exacts, but, you know, that's another way to do it.
Wow.
And that's probably easier than the mini mash because Beano's so cheap and easy.
Yeah.
You know, you get the liquid and just put a drop in or two.
That's it.
Yep.
Pretty little. Wow.
Pretty cool, huh?
Oh, my God. My brain hurts.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to get into the yeast and the fermentation and, you know, the carbonation and all that. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brew pub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brew pub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous watermelon wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park.
Jameel John Palmer book, Brewing Classic Styles. If you've been waiting to get your autographed copy, that's it. They're out. They're gone.
Well,
did you
miss your chance for a signed copy of Brewing Classic Styles? Well, this holiday season, the Homebrew Book of the Year meets the Homebrew Book of the Decade, and they're both signed. That's right, Brewing Classic Styles by Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer, and How to Brew by John Palmer are available for a very limited time this Christmas in the Brewing Network store. How to Brew is the book for first-time brewers and brewing veterans alike. Brewing Classic Styles is your recipe roadmap to award-winning beer, with specifics on every beer style in the BJCP guidelines. This limited package is now the only way to buy a signed copy of these legendary home brewing Bibles. Get your package before this offer runs out, only at the Brewing Network store, your homebrewing home for the holidays.
Did you know that you can not only order from More Beer online at morebeer.com and receive free shipping on most orders over $59, but you can also shop in person at their two retail locations located in Concord and Riverside, California. In fact, the Concord facility has grown to over 15,000 square feet to fit all the new products, expanded showroom, and new Knowledge Center classroom. And now, in conjunction with the Brewing Network, More Beer is making it easier than ever to keep up on what's happening. Download the More Beer monthly podcast by clicking podcast at morebeer.com. You'll learn about More Beer's history, sales and discounts on More Beer products, get to know team members, and hear ways to save you money. They're also launching a brand new website soon with more features and a better online shopping experience. So go to morebeer.com or call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
This is the Jamil Show.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
There you go.
Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah.
Aren't we having fun in this studio?
We are.
Must have something to do with beer.
Yeah. It's fun. I mean, what could be better if we're talking about beer?
Yeah, drinking beer.
Drinking beer and talking beer.
Yeah, there you go. As long as you got both.
Yeah.
All right, so we're talking Belgian Golden Strong Ale. And the yeast that you need to use for this is going to be the... either the White Labs WLP 570 Belgian Golden Ale or the Y-Yeast 1388 Belgian Strong Ale. And you have to use this yeast. If you're trying to do a Duvel clone and sure. You get those pear notes, you have to use these yeasts.
Okay.
You can go ahead and use others, and there's a lot of different yeast that you can use. You want something that's going to attenuate a little bit more. The WLP 550 and the Y yeast equivalent of that is fine and does a pretty good job. But again, if you're really trying to get this thing nailed down, it's the 570 or the 1388. If you're a dry yeast user, you can try the Saf Brew T58.
Mm-hmm. Get you somewhere there, but
yeah, I think it's worth taking your time to either get the appropriate yeast for it at whatever cost, growing it up yourself from bottle or ordering it at high prices and having it shipped from the U.S. or whatever the reason is, try and nail that down, because it makes a huge difference in this beer. You would use three liquid yeast packages, or you make yourself an appropriate starter for that. Pitch your yeast at 64 degrees Fahrenheit or 18 degrees C, and then you're going to let the temperatures ramp up slowly to about 82 degrees Fahrenheit or 28 degrees C over the course of about a week.
Right.
Okay.
Just let it slowly ramp up. To where?
82 Fahrenheit.
Over 7 days.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. So you're starting out at 64 Fahrenheit or 18 C.
Okay.
And what the purpose is, during the initial, replication phase and that initial growth phase, you're trying to hold that temperature down. And what's going to happen is you're going to you know, this is going to help keep your alcohols in a moderate state. You don't want to just blast away at 82 degrees from the get-go.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is you're going to end up with a real solventy alcohol. It's going to be like nail polish remover and things like that.
Right.
So you want to start at the lower temperature and let it ramp up towards the end. And the high temperature at the end just helps attenuation, keeps the yeast active all the way to the end, and helps them dry out this beer. Again, you want this thing to finish just bone dry.
Bone dry.
And, you know, the most common flaw with these seen in competition is that they're way too sweet.
Sweet, yeah. But they're just fermenting properly. Improperly, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
anybody can add ingredients and do a mash, but if you don't do that fermentation regime, you're probably not going to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah. And then do you lower it back down after 82, after a week? Because you don't want it to be hot on the yeast?
Well, I keep it about 82 as long as I see some sort of activity, and then I give it like another day or so, and then I go ahead and just crash chill it.
Really? You're done 7 days?
10 days.
10 days. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, if it's still going, let it go.
Right.
But if it's once it stops activity, then you know one of the things you do is take a gravity reading. If it isn't down below the double digits, if it's you know 10-10 or higher, you might want to make yourself a pitch of like a Cal Ale yeast or lager yeast or anything that will attenuate well.
Something clean and neutral.
Yeah.
But
Make a starter, active starter. It has to be in the middle of, you know, fermenting. It has to be like high Kreuzen, not past that.
Right.
And you add that whole starter to your beer while it's at the peak of activity.
Okay.
You can't just add yeast to the beer. The conditions won't let it go.
Sure.
You'll get nothing. You're just adding yeast to your beer
and it goes to sleep.
Fall to the bottom and do nothing.
Right. Sure.
It has to be already active and you hope, you know, it'll drag it down another couple of points, but that's about it.
Okay.
If you don't get close, you know, if you're at 10, 20, 10, 30, forget it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to get down there. You can add champagne yeast, but again, it's the same thing. You have to make it active. You have to make it fermenting. Then add it, and hopefully it'll pull it down. That's fine, too. But, again, you know, it's really difficult if you're stuck up there.
Yeah.
You know, you need to pitch the appropriate amount of yeast to start with, oxygenate, right temperature.
Right.
And that'll help pull this thing. You know, wort has to be proper fermentability.
Right.
All those things have to come together to get this thing down there.
It's a good tip. Really good tip.
So, you know, kind of tricky on that.
Yeah.
So when it's finished, you're going to carbonate this beer to about 4 volumes.
Whew.
All right. So really, really high carbonated. And
that's super carbonated.
Yeah, yeah. You know, your typical American pale ale is, you know, 2.5 volumes.
Yeah.
So this is almost double that. Real spritzy.
Yeah. Well, and when you pour a Duvel, it's just like this big white frothing,
right.
Like a cotton ball.
Champagne-like
in a lot
of ways.
Right.
And you can, I don't think you can store 4 volumes in standard beer bottles. They tend to burst.
Okay.
You know, some of the thicker beer bottles can handle it, but some of the thinner ones really can't. You got to be kind of careful. What you want to use is those 750ml champagne bottles or even the smaller champagne, the ones with the punt in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thick enough to handle 4 volumes easily.
Right.
And it's a nice way to present the beer, too.
Sure.
But, yeah, if you don't do that, it really doesn't hold the pressure. If you're kegging, piece of cake. You know, kegs will hold 4 volumes. They'll hold far more than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, not a big deal.
I think it's like 100 PSI or something before it blows.
Well, yeah, I think they're rated 125.
Wow. Yeah. Staying clear of the pressure relief valve.
Which is, yeah. Yeah, and you open your valve, your faucet, and beer goes shooting across your room. What else do we need to cover?
Well, you had mentioned that, you know, you don't want to start it hot, you know, because it'd be solventy.
Right.
And we were talking earlier, like, alcohols can give a flavor, and they're talking about this in the guidelines.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I mean, what are you tasting as far as an alcohol flavor?
Right.
I mean, they'd say it's spicy.
Well, there's some spices. The big trick in all the Belgian beers is the alcohol should never be harsh or hot. Okay, you know, with enough alcohols or hot, certain alcohols and you know, fermented hot, they can have a real bitter effect. There's an alcohol bitterness or bite that can come from certain alcohols. So what you want to, again, you know, this starting cooler and ramping up will give you a softer alcohol note. It'll be warming. What you want the beer to be, you take your drink, you don't really notice the alcohol. You feel it, and you get this warming, and then you go, oh, you know, yeah, this got quite a bit of alcohol. That's the ideal, and that's what you're shooting for. Now, in this beer, there's not a lot to hide behind. It's got quite a bit of alcohol, so yes, you're going to get some spicy notes from the alcohol.
Okay.
It's kind of like the precursor to the alcohol is becoming bitter.
Right.
It's you know, it's going to provide you know, certain esters and florals and, you know, different characters that you know, add a lot to the beer as well.
Okay.
So that's a big part of the alcohols as well.
Hmm. Well, what about phenolics too? Mm-hmm. I mean, what are phenolics and, I mean, whenever you see like Belgian guys drinking their Belgian, they say it's kind of, it's big in the phenolics in the nose. Or what? Mm-hmm. What are you exactly? What is that?
Well, the phenols can be things like you know, clove, smoke,
and that's
medicinal, plasticky.
Okay.
Well, yeah, mainly in these beers, yeast derived, but there's also phenols from other things. As well,
and
but for these are it's mainly just a yeast and fermentation thing.
Now, can oxidized alcohols be phenols?
I don't believe so.
Okay, just throwing it out there. So
right.
Interesting.
So yeah, you know, some phenolic character is actually you know, good for this beer, but again, you don't want any of these things to be, you know, completely overboard.
Sure.
I think, you know, a lot of times in home brewing we tend to, oh, you know, do a little bit too much. You know, we read this in the guidelines, and then, you know, people go crazy, and they do a little bit more, and they do a bit more, and then it's, you know, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Another question was, your buddy that you got that recipe from, he talked about step mashing.
Right.
And I'm curious if you do step mash, and I've been doing that lately on a few batches, and I've noticed that the wort flavor, there's more of a... it's like a sweeter, more rich malt wort flavor that I'm getting. And I don't know if that would contribute to step mashing as you're slowly cooking those sugars and you're raising them up 30 degrees over a course of an hour, you're step mashing.
Hmm.
Do you think that affects the maltiness and the malt profile like a strong golden ale at all? Or
You know, it might have some subtle differences, but I tend to think not.
Because I'm just wondering, is applying heat to sugar and then the wort, will that affect how they...
Well, if you're raising your mash temperature by, like, direct fire on the mash tun...
Yeah, it's direct fire.
Well, then what you're probably getting is some melanoid formation, you know, locally on the... on the, you know, the heat to sugar interface there.
Okay.
And it's not really a process of the conversion. So what I do is I recirculate through a heat exchanger, and I don't apply
heat.
Yeah, no direct heat.
Okay.
And so you know, I don't get that.
Okay.
And so the maltiness, the malt character, the, you know, the flavors, the bready, the biscuity, the toasty, all that stuff remain the same.
Okay.
And it's really just an effect on you know, the types of sugars, you know, the length of the sugars, more than anything else.
Interesting. Well, do we have any questions from the chat, or...
We do. A couple of things came through. They were asking if wood aging would benefit a beer like this.
Well, you can. I guess the question is, what is the benefit? If you prefer some wood character and a little bit of oxidation, then you know, you could put it in a barrel or something like that. Or if you wanted just the wood flavor, you could add some chips. A little bit of the tannins tends to balance some of the sweetness, but it's a dry beer to start with.
Right.
And I think if you added a bit too much, you add some tannins to it, it would be really
like
puckering
tannic.
Dry.
Yeah.
So I tend to think not,
okay.
Unless it finishes really sweet.
And someone had asked about White Labs 510 yeast. Do you know which one that is? The
Bestone?
Yeah. That's what it is. Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do I get points for that?
You win a dollar Jeopardy?
Yes. I'll have to give you some.
You get a hat.
What about it?
Can you would use it? Would it be good to use with this beer?
I think you could, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, almost all the Belgian yeasts, you can use them almost interchangeably.
Okay.
But if you're trying to clone the Duvel, then you got to go with the 570 or the Y-Yeast 1388.
Okay. And that was it from the chat.
Yeah, I think Stone uses Pistone a lot on their Belgians.
Yeah.
Like they've started this. I know a lot of homebrewers like, I need this Pistone yeast. Like, there's just like it's funny how yeast become like. Mm-hmm. Like, just a hot commodity. You're all of a sudden like, hey, you got some of that Pistone, you know? Or, I don't know. It's just funny how homebrews kind of fluctuate between yeast every year, you know? Mm-hmm. You were Bock for 3 or 4 years. Now you're getting back to Southern German lager or German lager.
Like, maybe it has to do with our troops that fought in the Ardennes and, the Bastogne yeast.
Okay. Totally over my head on that one.
I have one last minute question that just came through here.
Uh-huh.
How much sugar is in the recipe?
So, in this case, 3 pounds or 1.36 kilograms. So, for the extract batch, it's about 26%, I think, anywhere from 20 to 30% is about right.
Okay. There you go.
Have you ever had Prankster from North Coast?
Yes.
I don't recall that beer being really pale. It was almost kind of blondish copper. I don't know.
Yeah.
I saw it in the guidelines.
North Coast tends to push everything a little darker than
right.
than a really, you know, than the classic examples. Which and nothing wrong with that. I mean,
great brewery.
But if you're matching up against a classic example, they tend to be a little too caramelly and dark and stuff like that. And then again, this is a beer, you know, no caramel, no crystal malts. It's Pilsner and sugar.
That's it.
And this is, you know, this is the way it's done, and it needs to finish dry.
Right.
And if you're looking for the, you know, most classic of classic examples that's been around for a good long time, this is it.
That's it.
And a lot of the beers, somebody asked me about Southern English Brown or something like that, how it was. They compared it to, some commercial example recipe. You know, he calls the brewery and, he finds out, what they're using. And he's like, okay, they're using, like, pale malt, caramel coloring, and sugar.
Yeah.
And, and you're using, like, 5 different kinds of malt. And it's like, well, yeah. You know, part of it is... if you taste that beer from England, it doesn't seem like the recipe that they're giving.
Okay. Makes sense. Sure.
The second thing is, I like mine a little bit bolder, a little bit more flavorful, a little bit richer. And, I'm kind of pushing the boundaries on that, which is fine. But, there are certain beers where... you just can't do that.
Yeah.
It's too well known.
Right.
You can't change something that's perfect. It's too well known.
Right.
Other beers, too well known. And if you're trying to
Herkel.
Yeah. If you're trying to do kind of a copy of that, which was what a lot of people expect, not that you have to do that.
Sure.
In order to brew within the style. It's just that, you just can't get away with being, more creative on those.
Yeah. Don't add roasted barley.
Right, exactly. Won't be
exactly.
Yeah, don't be adding a roasted barley or crystal malt to this, or it just won't fit. All right, let me kind of recap this recipe. So you're starting gravity at 1072, finishing gravity 1007. Again, you want about 89-90% attenuation. This thing got to finish out dry. 32 IBUs. You are going to go with, as an extract brewer, liquid malt extract, Pilsner malt, 8.4 pounds or 3.8 kilograms. And then the rest is simple table sugar. You can use 3 pounds or 1.36 kilograms. If you're an all-grain brewer, sub out 11 pounds or 5 kilograms of a continental Pilsner malt instead of the Pilsner extract. Mash at 149 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 degrees C. And... hop with Czech sauce, 3.5% alpha acid, 90 minutes, 2 1/4 ounces or 64 grams to give you about 32 IBUs according to the Rager formula. You're going to ferment this with a White Labs WLP 570 Belgian Golden Ale or the Y Yeast 1388 Belgian Strong Ale. Ferment, start out at 64 degrees Fahrenheit, 18 degrees C. Let it ramp up over the course of a week to 82 degrees Fahrenheit or 28 degrees C. And carbonate about 4 volumes. You know what's interesting is somebody pointed out actually the first typo in the book.
And it's in the style.
No, it isn't. It's in the Belgian Strong Dark.
Oh, yeah? What's the typo?
Here, I'll run over time here.
There you go.
Justin's got his finger on the button. I got to hurry. It's the Belgian Strong Dark. And the interesting thing is, on the yeast, it says White Labs WLP 530 Abbey Ale 4. Okay, 530 is Abbey Ale.
Right.
And then there's 540 is Abbey Ale 4.
Okay. So you did 530 Abbey Ale 4.
I want my money back.
Yeah.
Right. So
refund.
The interesting thing is I've actually done this with 530, 540, and 550.
Okay.
Okay. And you can use any of those.
It's okay.
And actually 530 and 540 are fairly interchangeable. One tends to be a little more fruity than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, flip a coin, use either one.
It'll be fine.
And it'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I kind of got lucky on that one. And 550 tends to be a little drier. So if you're making that beer bigger and, you know, you need it to attenuate more, you go with the 550.
There you go.
And so, yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. Guy pointed out to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, see, typo.
One more last minute question coming through here. Do we need to age this beer?
Yes, and you know the interesting thing is, the more you want it to taste like a example of Duvel you get here, the longer you want to age that thing because that's how we get our beers
sure.
here.
So
you know they tend to be a little bit more aged. So you can, and it'll do well over time. And I think you know just like you can keep a bottle of Duvel around for a while and you know enjoy it as it changes character over time. Same thing on this.
Okay.
So it's interesting to try it early and then try it after 6 months or a year and see how different it is.
Is this beer, would you recommend like a bottle conditioning it at all just for aging purposes? Or?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
You can. I don't, but you certainly can.
Okay.
I think it certainly doesn't hurt.
Cool.
Okay. I guess
good
that's
show.
It. Next show coming up would be Munich Dunkel, which is absolutely one of my favorites. And then the show after that is going to be Northern English Brown. So we're going to do those live in about a month. And then, you know, if you're listening on the archives, it's God knows what time.
I'm going to bring you some samples. I've got two of those beers.
All right.
Want some feedback?
Cool. Yeah. All right. I think this is a good show, John.
Cheers.
I think we did this one justice.
Yeah. Happy holidays and happy new year.
Hey, happy new year to all those people. Woo-hoo! Bruce Drell.
Bruce Drell.